The following episode of Cinema Recall contains adult language, movie spoilers, and situations some may find to be objectionable, so listener discretion is strongly advised. Buddy, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I am your host, The Vern, and ladies and gentlemen, you are in for quite a show today, alright? We are going to be talking about the movie Showgirls 2, Pennies from Heaven,
yes.
And to help me out, I brought along a first-time guest for the show, very excited to have her on. We have Jeanette Miller-Mickenham. Hello, Jeanette.
Woo! Hello, everybody! I'm so excited to talk about this movie.
I was excited to have you on. When I posted on Twitter about doing an episode, I think you're the first one to kind of respond to this. I'm like, oh,
yes.
I loved it. Now, Jeanette's site is squeakyspeakshermind.com.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just give our listeners a little bit... introduction about your site and everything that you do with the whole Interspears here.
All right. Squeaky Speaks Her Mind centers around community theater reviews and blogs about it. But then my love of movies, it spawned some reviews of what I was watching in my downtime when I'm not doing community theater. Plus, it gives me more to write about since... there's a long periods of time without it, especially right now with the coronavirus. We had a lot of cancellations in our area. So,
but you still came up to my studio to record this podcast. So I appreciate it very much that you took the chance on the whole coronavirus to come visit me. I appreciate that very much, Jeanette.
Totally. I admit it. I'm all about creativity and, you know, people doing amazing things. Yeah.
Well, very cool. So I definitely urge our listeners to check our site. There'll be posted links on our like Anchor page and Stitcher page and whatnot. So very happy to have her on the show. We're going to do something different for Cinema Recall. Usually me and a guest will talk about certain iconic moments in movies and do like a brief description of the plot. But Showgirls 2... is quite a different beast, all right?
Yes.
Now, before we get more into Showgirls, I gotta do this. We're gonna take a quick little break and play some ads from some other podcasters. Before I do that, I do want to give a shout-out to many of the great people that have contacted me to be a guest on the show. Recently, we had on Chris Revell of Let's Chat with Revell and Friends, and we had Colby Mack of Colby Told Me So Podcast, who were on episodes talking about The Muppets and Spice World, and I'm very happy for upcoming guests. We're going to have on Mike D'Estacio to talk about Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, and filmmaker Maria Galdino to talk about Sesame Be Demented, so greatly appreciate those folks. But let's do this right now. We're going to take a small break, play ads from other podcast shows that you should definitely check out, and then we'll return.
We'll return after these messages.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptical prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world. Whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Hello there. Do you like movies but feel overwhelmed by the avalanche of titles available every week in the theaters and on streaming services? Do you struggle with justifying the increasing cost of movies at the theater or whether to pick up another streaming service? Well, I have a resource for you. One Movie Punch. Your movie review podcast for currently playing, newly streaming classic and cult movies. One movie per day, every day. We track the theaters, streaming services, and the occasional physical release to find the best movies currently available. We watch every film, then distill it into a short 3 to 5 minute review and publish a daily podcast. And now with year two, we've gone spoiler-free for all movies within the last 3 years and bringing on a team of reviewers with brand new perspectives and selections. Want more information? Head over to www.onemoviepunch.com to subscribe to the daily podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at One Movie Punch and Facebook at www.facebook.com/onemoviepunch. We'll see you there.
$50 a pop, you take them in the back. Touch and go. They touch, they go. You can touch them, they cannot touch you.
Oh, that's good.
Now, if they come, it's okay. If they take it out, come all over you, call a bouncer. Unless he gives you a big tip. If he gives you a big tip, it's okay. You got that?
Okay.
Good. If you want to last longer than a week, you give me a blowjob. First I get you used to the money, then I make you swallow.
Was he serious?
And we are back. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Cinema Recall podcast, talking about Showgirls 2, Pennies from Heaven. Mm-hmm. Now, during the break, we played a clip from Showgirls where Penny was talking to Al, the manager of the Cheetahs Club, talking about the rules of lap dancing. And that's kind of the last time you saw that character. You actually do see her when she hooks up with James, which is the guy played by Glenn Plummer, who wanted Nomi to be part of his like dance routine. If you don't remember, he's a guy who got basically thrown in jail and then kicked in the nuts, but yet he still wanted to like be around her. So apparently, him and Penny got, I guess, together. And they had a kid, and now we're just cutting to many years later with this. Now, before we get into certain plot details of this movie, Jeanette, I have to ask you, what was your experience like seeing this for the first time?
Well, first, I was just completely in awe of Rena Riffle. I think it's completely amazing that she took it upon herself to get this movie made. She was like, Showgirls 2 canceled. What? No, I'm going to do it. And she wrote it. She directed it. She starred in it. She did a Kickstarter campaign for it. And it's a completely guerrilla filmmaking, you know, experience. And you, if you are familiar with that at all, I saw it all over the place. This was somebody who was just had a dream to get this thing made. So that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, wow, man, she was committed to this project and she did whatever she had to do to get it to go. And then for me watching it, I know that there's some crazy things. I have so many feelings about it, but it just was like a carnival in my mind of what was awesome and terrible and what was awesome about the terrible, and there's just so much.
Okay. Yes.
So much.
Thank you for bringing up Rena Riffle. She is the lead person in this, wrote it, directed it, started it, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I have to admire her passion for wanting to get this made.
Yes.
Despite the fact that she probably doesn't really know a lot about certain elements of filmmaking and storytelling. Just exactly. The passion and drive she had to make this movie made makes me kind of appreciated of her a little bit. Like, I want to see her do more movies. In fact,
she does. She has a couple other ones.
She does. Okay, I will be curious to check those out. And I think that maybe if we can get her and Tommy Wiseau to make a movie, it would be the greatest thing ever.
Oh my gosh, that would be a match made, because she does a I should have written it down, but she did a movie that had to do with it was like a horror slasher type. Yeah. Well, I can't think of it. I think Showgirls 2 is her third one.
What, really? Oh.
Yes, which I was really shocked, because I was like, what? She's had practice with this before, and she's still Showgirls 2 is still Showgirls 2, so yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm looking at her director credits on there. Trash Ella.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Was one that she came, and then she made it called Trashilla Ultra Vitsen, and then Showgirls 2. Wow.
I know. And Trashilla has some scenes in it I watched the trailer for, with a little Barbie doll thing or something. I don't know. It's pretty crazy.
Okay.
It's got to be on my list, I think.
I like just the name of it alone. That just looks really kind of... and I'm willing to bet, see, I saw this movie not too long ago on the site called Midnight Pulp, which shows a bunch of, like, B-movies and exploitation films, and very happy that this was on there, and I'm betting I'm probably going to find Trashilla on that network as well. My first experience watching this movie is for, like, utter kind of confusement and bewilderment, because... Showgirls was shot with, like, a huge budget. It's beautiful looking. The weird thing about Showgirls is that it has, like, kind of B-movie style acting in, like, a big Hollywood A-list blockbuster setting. And so those two things are...
Yes, I suppose that's true. Except I think that was only with Elizabeth Berkley. I feel like she really got the short end of the stick with Showgirls. I love Showgirls. I thought it was gorgeous and beautiful. And it had a really good story there. And I will watch anything with Gina Gershon in it. But Elizabeth Berkley, they didn't give her a good character development. Like, she just flies off the handle. I think if she was more normal-ish, the film would have done much better.
Oh, don't get me wrong. You know, I think that their performances are good, but they're still both, even Gina Gershon and Elizabeth Berkley, they're both good in the roles. I think Gina Gershon knows that she's being in a campy movie, and Elizabeth Berkley thinks that she's being in a serious movie.
Yes.
So those different personalities and performances are still kind of like B-level performances, and then you've got like this beautiful, like this widescreen aspect ratio and good cinematography. Compare that with Showgirls 2, which looks like it was shot with a home video camera.
Oh my god. I think it probably was.
I think so too. And the fact that all the locations are outside, like all the strip clubs are outside, shots that shows locations are like someone's postcards.
Yeah, hardly anybody is there. I that's what I mean about this guerrilla filmmaking. They literally, I envision them all in a van and then pulling up to a place and going, okay, there's nobody around. Jump out, let's do the scene. Doing the scene, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, oh, nobody's in the stairwell. Okay, let's show us walking down the stairwell, you know, in these weird little coves. Weird places.
Definitely.
I'm a showgirl, and I was born to be the star of the show.
Ain't no happy ending, man, when you're chasing that dream.
I'd like to stick this in your G-string.
So, are you gonna be an actress or something?
I'm gonna be a star.
I had to claw my way all the way to the top.
Where the showgirls sizzle and the star
That's my part.
All right, so get into this right now. I wrote some notes on this. So okay. In the movie begins, Penny is still stripping, and she is told by this producer dude that she gives a lap dance to come out to L.A. or someplace for an audition. Now, during this time, she's still with James, played by Glenn Plummer. Now, and on the way there, she meets up with the same guy who picked up Nomi from the first movie.
Yes.
Now, here's the where the two. So they drive together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they actually they have sex a few times.
Yeah.
And then he leaves her. Now, this part that's kind of weird. She meets a girl who she sees kill someone, and then she takes her outfit, but we never see that lady again.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, like you're mostly on the right track. So when the movie opens, Jimmy's telling her you have to have formal training because she wants to be a dancer. Then she decides to leave without telling anybody. She gets in the car with Jeff, or the original Jeff, who picks up Nomi. They hit it off, and he steals her suitcase. He leaves her. Then she does hook up with those impersonators, who the gal, the Marilyn Monroe gal, she kills the two guys, and then Penny or Hope or Hilga, whatever you want to call her.
Yeah, we can do the Hilga thing later.
she gets into that struggle with the Marilyn Monroe chick and steals her, and then finds all of the money in the purse and is like, okay. So then she's like, I need a disguise. And then she puts on the bloody dress, which I didn't get. And yeah, and then she winds up in Seven Sisters.
Okay, so we're now in the part of the movie where she's at this town.
Yeah.
And she meets this guy who asked her to be his star dancer.
Yes.
And I'm forgetting that character's name, but all I wrote down is that she met a guy, and he takes her to his place, and he has, like, a lot of, like, Nazi memorabilia. So I'm going to refer to this guy as being Nazi lover guy.
So that guy is Goddard. And he, first of all, she's doing beer bongs with some random guys in a side yard. Then he shows up, and she's like, hi, let me give you a lap dance. I don't know you. And then they go to this crazy weird restaurant, and they talk about all the Nazi symbol. I was like, what the heck does this have to do with anything? And then, yeah, you can be my star dancer. And she's like, okay. So, yeah. And then okay. He pulls her into his web of.
Yeah, and then you're introduced to, I guess, his wife, I guess, or his other partner.
His fiance, Katya.
Katya. And then he also introduced Penny, aka Hope. Actually, he calls her Helga.
Yeah.
Which I never quite understood why.
I think she just didn't want to tell anybody her real name, so she makes it up.
Okay, that's what it was. You went to avoid that. Okay. And then he introduced her to this guy named Vladimir.
Yes.
And they, you know, have a nice date, and they kind of hook up. And she's, like, totally in love with this Vladimir guy. And then you never see him ever again.
No, because he was a fake date. Oh. Goddard had set her up as a high-priced escort, and he gives her money, and she's all mad. I'm not a whore. I'm not a this. And he's like, well, here's your cut from the money, and she takes it.
Oh, okay. So Vladimir.
He's a total pimp. Yeah. He's a total escort pimp.
He was pimping her out to Vladimir. So
yes.
Had nothing to do with love at all. Just kind of whoring her out. Okay.
But
all right.
Penny didn't know that because she's not the brightest.
God. Okay. Fair enough. And then later on, we found out that Hope wants to be part of this popular dance show.
Oh, my God.
Which is actually kind of, like, really laughably bad because
it's
this is
so
supposed
bad.
To be – well, this is supposed to be the most, like, popular dance show.
I know.
But it's shot in, like, this really cheap and broken-down theater.
Yes.
Where I see, like, maybe three people. And most of the people that are in the audience are the producers of the show.
It's so terrible. I mean, there is no, like – decorations anywhere. It's just like a bare stage with a pole and they're like crammed in the corner.
Yeah.
And the choreography is ripped right out. There's so many Showgirls rip-offs throughout this whole movie.
Oh my gosh, yes. I wrote that in my notes too. And
oh my gosh.
Even some of the lines too are taken directly from
every time somebody says, darling, I'm like, hello. Just, there's so many things. So
darlin',
many.
Darling.
Yeah.
You have James using the everybody's got AIDS and shit line in the beginning of the movie. Yeah. Okay. So moving on from this. So there's a famous dancer.
Yeah.
In this thing who gets hurt and is looking for a replacement, which becomes the Katya. I wrote down the nicest guy's wife.
Yes.
And the Godard wants Penny to meet with the guy for sets, I'm guessing, so she can help get passes for the dance show that she wants to be part of.
Yeah, she's pretty determined to get on the show. And so, first, I really, you know, the rhinestones on the floor, and then the dancer, you know, slips and breaks her hip, and then they have to find, you know, injures her hip anyway, and they have to find somebody. Well, then, of course, the producers call Godard, because, you know, they're pulling in favors in this, you know, lodge, and he sends Katya, and who... I'm sure she's great, but I was like, man, anyway. So then Penny sees her on TV and she's like, that's my part. And so he's like, okay, well, you got to meet with these people and then I'll get you backstage passes to the show. So he just keeps setting her up on these sex dates and dangling the carrot of getting close to this show. And so she keeps saying yes.
Even though she knows it's kind of bad for her. I did laugh when the main dancer kind of went down because they recreated that one sequence from Showgirls. So they put the gems on the ground, and the way the lady falls is great because he basically just, like, kneels down.
These people are not professional fallers.
No.
They do not know how to do this.
I know that, but I would like it a lot more if they just took, like, a doll and just dropped the doll on the floor. Just done something completely ridiculous. Because the way that she falls, it looks like she had a bad spasm in her neck or something like that. Or her leg.
Yeah.
And she just falls down because she's kind of in pain, not because someone put gems on the ground to make her fall.
Yes. Well, and then later, when we see that character later, yeah.
All right, so we talked about the me and the guy versus passive for the show. Mm-hmm. Now, the Katya and Penny become friends, and she's teaching her how to do ballet.
Yes.
And I found the whole sequence kind of to be funny because she's just trying to tell her to do a simple turn. And I guess Penny doesn't have good eye coordination balance because she can't really do that type of stuff. And all Penny wants to do is just do like these like sexualized dance moves.
Yeah.
And there's nothing erotic about it at all. Like,
no. I did enjoy the first. They have such a love-hate relationship. They are so hot and cold, those two women. And yes, all the technical language for dance, for ballet, and Penny's just stuck in her stripper mode. Those were really, really interesting to watch.
My favorite moments of their kind of dynamic together. First of all, it was when they have like this. I'll do that scene. Okay, but they have one scene.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have a whole conversation holding cooked wieners.
Yes.
And they're doing like, you know, it's the whole exposition portion of the movie where they're giving backgrounds on each other's characters. And all they're doing is just holding these cooked wieners. And they're talking about the food they used to eat back in the day about, and they had that line, isn't this much better than rice and vegetables or
yep.
water and ground rice and vegetables?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right from there. Have this conversation, holding these wieners, and then at the end, they take one, and they each take a bite out of it at the other end, kind of doing a Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A real awesome version of that.
They could fry an egg on my asphalt.
That's what it takes. A burning desire. An obsession.
Katya, can we do this again? You really inspire me. Goddess power.
Goddess power.
Very much so. Now, help me out there, Jeanette. Mm-hmm. I think this scene took place before the pool scene with them two.
Yes. The infamous pool scene.
So they recreate the infamous pool scene in this very cheap-looking hotel pool.
Yeah, is it? I couldn't tell. I thought maybe that all the interior house scenes, maybe that was actually Rena's house and that was her pool. I don't know. It's hard to tell because they did spend a lot of time in that one particular location. So I thought that maybe, yeah.
No, that...
Regardless.
That very could well be, but they tried to do the whole flapping fish right there. And it's really kind of weird watching someone kind of do like a cover version of that scene. Because the original scene in Showgirls, I mean, it was supposed to seem like this very kind of like hot and sexy scene. I'm sure
very Paul Verhoeven was
supposed to be passionate and very like wild. And that scene has become kind of a joke.
Oh, yeah.
So watching someone else try to recapture that scene that's already been seen as a joke, it feels like you're doing a joke on top of another joke, and it kind of loses the humor that the scene had.
Yeah, and not only that whole sequence, they, like, obviously Rena is like, okay, you're going to pour the champagne on me, and you're going to lick me, and we're going to have really awkward, stiff girl-on-girl kissing, but I'm not going to do anything to you. And then you're going to have to hold me up in the water while I'm, thrashing about and try not to drown yourself in the process. I mean, like, the whole thing was cringy to watch.
Because I don't think any of them had any really kind of, like, any chemistry at all.
No, I agree.
I'll get to a sequence later on that has an orgy scene, which also was very kind of awkward and weird.
Yes.
So, and then here's what I wrote down, too. So, they write down time cue cards during this movie, and I don't understand why they're used. Like, 2 weeks later.
Oh, yeah.
A month later.
Yeah.
Well, like, does it really matter if it's a day or a month later? I don't know.
It does not matter. However, And I maybe we'll get to that this one particular scene where something catch the guy at the rest stop kind of thing catches up to her. So hopefully we get to that, because the time cards, there's some details there.
Yes, I totally forgot where that. I know when you're talking about, there's a moment when Penny meets up with this guy who says that she gave him his first lap dance.
Yeah, but then they bring him back later.
Yeah, so I thought, well, it's kind of weird having him in the movie. You even have, like, another character from Showgirls, and I recognize him as being the guy who told Nomi to go to a boat show to basically have a three-way with him and some sort of Japanese business promoter.
Yeah.
He's in this movie, and he runs, like, a pawn shop now.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
So I found that whole thing to be kind of weird. So we mentioned before that both Penny and Katya have become friends, mm-hmm. and lovers in a way. And then for unknown reason, she hates Penny.
Yes.
And she has a sequence where she rubs lotion all over the mirror and herself. And I have no effing freaking idea about why the hell she is upset with her. And I'm glad to have you on the show.
Yes, because Goddard, all he talks about is Helga, Helga, Helga. So Katya is jealous. And so she's like, get out of here. She has some great lines like, guards, take the trash out. You know, who didn't take the trash out and gets her kicked out. But then she does this whole monologue about how he just wants her to be a good cook. Katya in the mirror, you know, she's talking about the downfall of her relationship with Goddard. And then she goes into that whole meltdown with the Pond's cold cream. I just was like, this is amazing, because she can't even look at herself, so she's gonna put the cold cream all over the mirror, and she's doing this terrible laugh/, you know, descent into madness, and then she's got it all over her face, and it's so terrible. It's so terrible. I thought if it was me, it would be so authentic, because I would be like, how did I get myself into this terrible movie? And I would literally be, it would be an Oscar-worthy performance. So.
Oh, I bet. I bet I would love that.
Oh, my God.
All right, so now Penny, a.k.a. Hope, a.k.a. Helga, mm-hmm. She becomes an escort.
Yeah.
And she's going to the studio executive's office. And she does this erotic dance with an apple.
Yes.
And then, so basically she and the producers, like a male producer and a female producer, they're in bed. And then this other woman shows up and she's like, hey, thank you very much for inviting me to yada yada show. And he's like, hey, let's not worry about business right now. It's about pleasure.
Right.
And thus begins the most awkward, non-sexiest orgy ever.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what I was saying. We're going to see that star dancer chick come back, because the one that originally fell and hurt her hip is the woman who eats the apple. Remember? She's walking to the bed with a cane. The redheaded girl.
Yeah, I don't think I caught that was the same woman.
That's the same girl. That's the same woman. And so the dancer, the lead dancer who falls from the gems, and the producer, they're married. And they're so, but they like to, you know, have a good time. And so they bring Hope/Penny/Helga. And then, yeah, the secretary comes, or whoever she is. And so they're all rolling around. I will say that the redheaded dancer girl And the secretary business girl, they have much better sexual chemistry than anybody in this whole entire movie. They actually look like they're kissing for real. I mean,
yeah.
It's the only moment, I think.
They do, and maybe I was like writing down notes and I didn't really see much of their passion, because it seemed to be kind of brief. I'm like, I'm just trying to like write a series of notes every time a scene comes on that does make any sense. I'm like, well, what the fuck? I gotta write this shit down.
Yeah, totally.
But it's very much a very awkward set scene. Okay, so the Nazi guy, Godard, wants Penny to be in this snuff movie.
Oh, yeah.
And he's showing her the scene of one being shot, and in watching this random cute lady in lingerie cleaning. And I forgot who the maid's name is, but after Godard shows Penny the scene of a snuff film and wants her to be in it, the maid in lingerie tells Penny, like, hey, look, this isn't a good idea. You know, a lot of producers get women who are very vulnerable to star in movies like this, thinking that it's going to be just a regular porn film, and then they get killed. And then she says, I learned this from my detective classes.
Yes.
So I just found the whole thing about how this, that, you know, cute maid in French outfits, you know, warning our hero about potential dangers, and that would have been fine by itself, but the fact that she added in, I learned this from detective classes I'm taking. Just...
Yeah, well, that... on top of, why would Goddard want his number one girl to be killed? I mean, that's... You're like... You're cutting yourself off from future revenue. Why would you do that? Well, I feel like he would want to exploit her as long as possible. And, you know, only when she's not willing to do anything anymore, then kill her off. You know, like, why would you? It just seemed like he's not a very smart businessman.
I wasn't quite sure if I'm not quite sure of when he wanted to shoot that snuff film. Maybe he wanted to shoot it at a later date.
It could be.
Or something.
Yeah, it could be. But yes, she, the maid with that wears no, you know, this just lingerie. I never really quite understood the whole point of that, except the overall sense is, if we show a lot of boobs, if we show a lot of scantily clad, if everybody's basically barely wearing any clothes, maybe we'll get a better chance of people watching this. I'm not sure.
You know what this reminds me of a little bit, and I'm going to spear off to any of the categories here, but watching this movie, it kind of reminded me of watching David Lynch's Inland Empire.
Oh.
I got that kind of vibe, the way that it was shot and the locations, just the look of the movie.
Well, I think she did pull from a lot of different areas, because, like, if you go back to the Marilyn Monroe impersonator scene, that's like straight out of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Where are you? You know, and Bette Davis. That's like a total rip from there. When she's like, where are you? You know, where are you? I think Rena Riffle was trying to glean as much from all her, you know, favorite movies or something of moments that she really liked, to kind of help give her an idea of how she wanted to direct a specific scene. So I think that's what makes this movie so much fun in a weird way to watch, is because she rips off everything.
Yeah, that's
and just throws it in there. And then I feel like she must have just, whatever they shot, they kept. I doubt that there is anything that they edited out.
I agree with that. I believe she probably edited this movie as well, if I'm not mistaken. I have to check back on
I
that.
don't know.
But so back into the movie,
Yes.
so the Godard becomes jealous of Penny,
Yeah.
and wants her to continue be an escort, and wants her to pay him. Apparently, she's getting more famous, I guess, for the clients she has, from what I understand.
Well, that and she actually gets to be the understudy now for Katya.
Yeah, like, so she pushes Godard down the stairs, and I wrote down in a very badly done way because it looks like he's crawling
Yeah.
down the stairs. He gets to the end, she has a gun, she shoots him
In the collarbone,
in the
shoulder.
collarbone,
Yeah.
but he gets up and runs off. And here's the most confusing thing about that scene: after she pushes him down the stairs and shoots him, is that a cop is there for no reason.
Keep messing things up.
But I'm living my dream. How is this messing things up? What's your dream? Owning whores?
You are nothing. Nothing but a dumb beer bong slut. I molded you into what you are today, and now you're living the dream. Go figure. I want what's mine, and you are mine. Angel with dirty face. You make me sick.
Yeah.
Like, a cop is there, and then suddenly we cut to her at a locker room, and she meets up with Katya, and she's upset with Katya that she had an orgy, and then the cop just suddenly appears there. Now, I'm not quite sure if this cop can somehow move dimensions from different place to different place. Is he a superhero? I feel like he's a superhero, like some sort of like Doctor Who level person that can bend time and space. But she's there,
Yeah.
the cops chase after her, and then this is where I need your help with here. Then she wakes up in her bed. So was that all a dream?
That I don't know. I don't know. There's like some weird things in that little part of the sequence that I just was like, okay, I'm just gonna move on because the there's a lot of weird things. She gets the audition to be on the show after sleeping with every having the orgy, and then she gets to be the understudy and whatever. But yeah, but then her past is coming back. You know, the whole triple murder thing is coming back to get her. Her world is closing in on her really quick.
Which kind of surprises me that the when she meets the guy at the car who tells Penny that, "Hey, I used to be you used to be my first lap dance," I was surprised that wasn't the cop that came back to arrest her.
It is.
It is that guy. I thought it was a completely different cop.
No, it is that guy, and
Oh.
that's the thing with the time cards. All this time goes by, and yet he is visiting the murder scene and sees a perfectly pristine napkin that she used to blot her lips and wipe after going pee in the woods. Like
Okay.
it was completely a pristine napkin, and he's like, oh, now I'm gonna get you. And then he finds the business card of the producer who eventually IDs Penny in the lineup. But we might be getting too far ahead. Do you remember that part?
Yeah, no, I do, and I thought that was like a different cop. The cop that shows up at her home after she pushes the guy down, I thought that was a different cop. I did not realize it was the same guy.
That I
So.
think that is a different policeman that shows up at her house, but the detective at the end is the detective who stops to see if she needs any help with her car and says, "Hey, you gave me a lap dance." Those two
Okay.
guys are the same. But I think you're right, the
Gotcha.
cop, I don't really know the story about the cop. He just seemed to be out of place.
Yeah, very much out of place there. Okay. So Katya is now not upset
Right.
with Penny. She says she feels old and wants Penny to join her and go into San Francisco. And then I wrote down she destroys the cake.
I loved that so much because it was like, first of all, nobody says what their real age is, and she's like, "Well, what? All right, 34, 38." Nobody wants to cop to how old they really are. But she's old. She's got this big slice of cake with three candles in it. And then she totally destroys it with their hands. I was
Yes.
like, that is so awesome. I was waiting for her to like wipe it on her face, but she never did.
She never did. Oh, I wish she would have done that.
I would have been
So,
like, yes. But no.
then we find out that Penny had a twin sister who died in a bubble bath incident.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I just found the whole thing just to be kind of like a random thing to say. And I feel like that type of exposition should have been maybe used for, I don't know, something in the middle, I guess, but the whole thing about the twin sister
Maybe when
and
you were eating the hot dogs, that would have been good.
that would be good for that sequence right there. We all want to know that Penny had a twin sister. In fact, I'd much rather watch a movie about her twin sister than watch this.
Oh,
So
geez. Well, and then I didn't know that cremation remains would turn into diamonds. I mean, that's like, how come people haven't, figured that one out and made a fortune? I don't
I,
know.
yeah.
Turn it, it's like an alternative to burial, and then even cremation. You don't even have to have the ashes on your shelf. You could just have it made into jewelry.
Turn, a tragedy into a positive thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and you could just wear them with you all the time.
As I would, that would be great.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%. So now they're in San Francisco, both Penny and Katya. Am I wrong here? But does Penny become a whore for Katya? Is Katya now her pimp?
Katya is now her pimp. She made $43, and I'm thinking, why are you walking the streets for $43? Number one, Penny has a great body. She's aside from the scenes where she has extra black, when she does her makeup, her showgirl makeup, she's actually quite pretty to look at, and her body is rocking through the whole thing. So why are you walking the streets? And she's competing with the trans, she said. So she only made $43, but why isn't she stripping? She could make so much more money stripping in San Francisco.
Oh, majorly, any city she could make a huge buttload of money
Yeah, I
just
don't get
stripping.
them. Yeah, so I don't, yeah.
Okay, all right. Now, for some reason, Penny, aka Hope, she'll fuck anyone if they say that they're a producer because they're at a show, and I think it was Phil from the first movie. He's doing this like almost like offensive, stereotypical
Oh
Oriental
my gosh, so bad.
performance, and then he comes to her like backstage and just says like, "I'm a producer," and she's like, "Well, I'll audition for
Be right
you."
now. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they have sets right away, and then Hope, aka Penny, she puts Vaseline on Katya's shoes to sabotage her. And I had no idea that they were going to be part of a dance show in San Francisco. This is not the same show that she was auditioning before, right? Was this a different dance show?
No, okay, so try to go back into the pawn shop, because this is the same owner guy from the pawn shop who's always looking in the newspaper, and he mentions a tiki bar and circles it in the paper. Now fast forward to the literally, this was the only time I was offended by this movie, was when he was doing that Asian thing. I was like, oh man, this has crossed the line for me. So then it's weird that's it, but that was, I was like, no, this was too far. And so then, yeah, Penny auditions, and then she's like, okay, I'm going to sabotage my best friend, and puts the Vaseline on her shoe. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for clearing that up, Jeanette, because I got really kind of, because I saw about the pawn, I saw that guy at the pawn shop.
Yeah, same guy.
And I was like, why is he here again for the show? And I thought it was at some sort of community theater. I thought they were just trying to get like a little bit more cash.
No, he's just like a new business opportunity. So he takes over this tiki bar.
Ah, okay. So she puts Penny puts Vaseline on Kaya's shoe to sabotage her. It works. She slips and falls. She actually does a little bit better stunt, somewhat a better stunt job.
Right, glorious,
Than the other ladies did. So I'll give credit for that. Jimmy, Glenn Plummer, comes back.
Yeah.
Now he's the lead, and he says he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to go ahead and stay in San Francisco. Don't know why, but they have somewhat of a nice moment here.
You know what it is about you? You're not dumb. You just play dumb.
Like a possum?
No. A possum plays dead. Not dumb.
Now, I remember when Glenn Plummer was in a bunch of movies in the 90s. Not just this movie, but he was in Speed.
Oh.
He was in Total Recall. I mean, he was kind of a big thing back in the 90s. You know, he never got like a lead role. Anything. I feel kind of bad for the guy that he never had much for his career. But I felt kind of bad for him as well, because he actually, if you do watch those other movies, he actually is a good actor.
I felt bad for him in this movie, because you can see it on his face that he's dying inside. Like,
yeah.
Every scene that he is in, he's like, this is what my life has resorted to. I'm going to try to make the best of it. And I think it's even the most apparent in this final scene with Penny, which did not make, well, it makes sense, but then there's dialogue that doesn't make sense. Like, he talks about going to Broadway, and he says, look me up if you ever make it there. Why does Penny not say, I'll go with you? That's like the ultimate show dancing place in the world, I would think, from her perspective. And yet she's like, no, I'll just stay here at this tiki bar. I've got a good thing going.
And I was totally wrong. He was not in Total Recall, but he was in the movie Strange Days, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
Trespass.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he has good roles and other movies that I definitely recommend you go back and watch some of those films from the 90s to show that, hey, this guy actually is a good actor, and he can actually do more than just being the guy from Showgirls. So just want to mention that real quickly. So after they have their moment, Penny is arrested.
Well, yes, she's arrested, but before we go there, I love Jimmy's final moment when he leaves and then comes back and says how she's not really dumb, she's just plays dumb, and then Penny says, like an opossum? And he's just like stunned. No, they play dead. And then he just has this look on his face like, forget it, and he leaves.
Yes.
I just thought that was like so amazing. But then she gets, yeah, she gets arrested. The cop finds her napkin that has not aged one bit from being out in the woods. And then he gets her arrested outside the, I don't know, is she staying at a lodge or something with one of the backup dancers?
I imagine,
or she's
so
coming out of the building or something, and then she gets arrested. And
yeah, I'm not quite sure exactly where the location is, but she gets thrown in prison. And then here's the weird thing too, that Sensei Maid, who is doing that detective classes, she is back.
Yeah,
and I'm not quite sure if she's a lawyer or a cop or something like that, but apparently she wrote book that got Penny released. And
yeah, she writes a thesis and somehow gets her released from jail 6 months later. So that's the justice system at work,
because apparently a woman wearing like lingerie can get, you know, bills passed, I guess, in this society. Weird thing. And so she's released. And then she gets a ride back. What's that? What was that?
Oh, yeah. She gets released. Yep.
Oh, she did.
She's
okay,
free.
Sorry.
She's free.
She's free. And at the end, we see that she gets a ride back from the same guy. I think his name is Jeff.
Jeff
or Jet?
Yeah. Jeffrey.
Jeffrey. From the first movie, and ends with her pulling a gun on the guy. And she has a line there too. She says, you are a star fucker now.
Yep.
Oh.
I he doesn't recognize her till, you know, are they just like drive off happily ever after together?
Yeah.
LOL, we're together. So
we're together. Yeah, who knows how long that's gonna last till. That's kind of the main kind of like things I wrote down about Showgirls 2. Was there anything that I'm missing out on with Showgirls 2? Like any scenes that I should comment on?
I think that there were lines that just some of the dialogue was just gold. People call the Goddard guy after he meets her, and they're talking about her being Miss Budweiser, and he says he calls her nuts or something. And somebody says, because you are dumb. I wrote that down. Some of the lines were just so perfectly placed, and then other dialogue just didn't make sense. But I'm surprised you didn't mention the Descent into Madness that Goddard has playing his violin in the pool that's now empty after Katya and Hope leave.
Oh. All right, well, I maybe have like was not painted attention to that moment there. I kind of know vaguely of him doing that, but I just didn't write down in my notes. So there's like a whole bunch of things going on.
Oh, yeah, you would have to write down a scene-by-scene breakdown to write down everything that you could possibly talk about.
But try to remind me like what kind of happens. He just is in the pool and...
Yeah, it's after he gets his shoulder strap shot off, you know, and takes that tumble down the stairs. And then Katya and Hope, they take off. And he's just, you know, making music with his violin in an empty pool. Like, he's sitting on the stair in an empty pool because, you know, his two leading ladies, his life is basically over because his paychecks have just left town. And so now he's taking it out on his violin.
Okay.
But I was just like, these, everybody has their meltdown moments, except for Penny. Penny stays really consistent throughout. She's just the only consistent character who's completely solid. Everybody else is just...
She's also kind of, in a way, clueless and just does things because people tell her to do stuff. And she thinks that, I gotta please everybody, and that's how I'm gonna become a success, if I make everybody happy. For me, Showgirls 2, it recreates moments of the first movie, like you said. But it has no context.
No,
it.
It doesn't.
Like,
it doesn't need to exist.
Yeah. I found it funny, too, that a lot of the background music, all the score in this movie, is the same free music that I use for my podcast.
Well, yeah, except there's a couple, I think in the credits, they talk about a couple of small bits that they take credit for creating.
Oh, no, there's some
original music.
No, there is some original music in this, especially during the whole dance competition, and even at the end, there's an original song. A lot of the songs try to mirror the music of the first movie in bad attempts, but a lot of the like incidental score and the background music, that's all free stuff you can find. I think it's actually Kevin MacLeod in Comptech music that's free to download on there. I found that to be hysterical, and I mentioned that a lot of the locations are all, like, outside, and you mentioned that because of guerrilla filmmaking, so they probably did not have any permits to shoot this
movie.
They
probably didn't. That's what's so amazing. I think that's why I admire her so much, and one of the things that I can appreciate so much for this movie in particular, it's 2.5 hours long, and they just... went for it. They got people together, and they just went for it. I wonder. I would be curious to ask her the timeline. Like, did they do it in like 25 days, or how did they shoot it? I would be so curious to find out the production timeline and all that kind of stuff, because I feel like Showgirls 2 almost needs a behind-the-scenes documentary version as a how to get a movie made from concept to fundraising to actually that guerrilla filmmaking where you're just out there. We did that stuff when I was in high school back in I'll date myself right now, but in my senior year, 87-88, my friends and I were going all around town making movies like that, just driving around and like making stuff up and filming it and then making these little short films. And so that's what this reminds me of. And it can still be done. Like, I think it's like a how to get a movie made, even when your script is terrible.
So, yeah, like I said, you know, I admire this lady's passion and her drive for making this movie. Cause we can make jokes about the movie and how bad certain scenes were.
Oh, yeah.
But hey, at least she went out and she did it.
Totally.
And I can't say this shit right now because I'm not making a movie, so what do I have to say?
Right.
All right.
Me too.
So I can say this movie is terrible, but she does have one up on me because she goes, hey, look, I took a chance on something – and I went for it, okay? What are you passionate about? What are you going for right now? So right now I'm in a band and we're like cutting our first EP.
Sweet.
So we're getting that all put together. And then we're planning on going on tour this summer with it.
Awesome.
But even that, we're just kind of just going out there and doing it. We're just trying to play any place that will have us.
Okay.
And just kind of going for it though. But I like the fact she's doing grill filmmaking. That's what I want to do with, like, music.
Yeah.
And maybe other film projects or any other projects I want to do. They just kind of do it I like the fact that Rena Rifle has this don't give a fuck attitude, which I find to be kind of infectious, and you gotta love that.
Yeah.
Despite the movie itself. Like, I wasn't a fan of the movie, but I'm curious to watch her other features.
I am, too. I am, too. I'm really curious to watch her other features because she clearly is not letting anything get in her way of doing what she wants to do. She's getting people together, believing in her projects, and they're making movies. And, I mean, that's real independent movie-making stuff right there. I've watched a lot of independent movies these last – especially this last week and a half or so, I feel like. But truly independent movies, like this one where you're raising the money yourself and you're shooting it yourself and everybody's taking the turn holding the boom mic and, you know. And the same with your music. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like so much fun to me. I've been in a band. I miss it. And we had a blast playing everywhere that we could play, you know, just being in front of people and doing your thing. That's what it's about. It's really fun and exciting. I hope you guys have a great time doing that.
Well, thanks, Jeanette. Matt, what did you play? Did you sing? Did you play an instrument?
I am mostly a singer. It was a cover band. We did pop, rock, country, you know, pretty much whatever I wanted to sing, my band would play. And I currently have been teaching myself how to play bass. I started playing bass a few years ago when our bass player went on tour with a different band, because that's what you do in the Northwest. You're like in three or four bands at the same time. And so our bass player left, and I was like, how hard can it be? And so it is hard to play the bass and sing at the same time. But I was doing it because I just learned the specific songs, just some real basic bass lines, so I could kind of have just that little bit of filler sound. And then we got a new bass player, and I was very excited because it is really hard to play the bass and sing at the same time. And what?
I agree. Playing any instrument and try to sing at the same time is very difficult. Like, I play drums for the band,
oh, nice.
And there are a few songs where I have to sing and play drums.
So you and that's like never... channel your Phil Collins and stuff?
Yes.
I know that's who you're thinking of, right? When you're playing the drums and you're singing, you're like, I don't care no more. You're doing...
Actually, no, my main influences for drums are like Sheila E.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. She's
and,
awesome.
Made Way of the Red Stripes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a kind of hardcore thrash punk rock band.
And you're thinking of Sheila E. when you're doing hardcore thrash? That's really kind of cool.
I think about like hip hop when I'm in a punk band. Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Like a lot of like back, like kind of like different avant-garde.
Yeah.
Back beats and whatnot there. Yeah, we're kind of like all over the place musically. But yeah, I'll have to send you some tracks once we get them completed. But I think right now we're going to get back into Showgirls 2. We kind of wrapped up Showgirls 2.
Right.
We always ask guests about this, Jeanette.
Yes.
What would you rate Showgirls 2 on a scale of 1 to 5?
Okay, well, I'm going to say in real movie world, I would say this is probably like a 2, and that's being generous.
Yeah,
because of the script is terrible. That there's moments where the editing is just doesn't make sense. Well, there's a lot of moments.
the whole movie.
the whole chronological time of the story, and I pick up a lot of details that really irritate me. Like when they're getting ready to go into the pool for the sex scene, and there's ants crawling around by her feet. I was like, can't you sweep that off and then just do the shot again? Like,
so yes.
There's things that hold me back from great scores. So I'm going to say I'm going to be generous and give it a 2. On a bad movie or like B movie, because I love B movies so much, I'm going to say this is practically perfect. and I don't there's nothing that I could make worse to make it better. So I'm going to give it a perfect 5.
Nice. Yeah. Perfect good bad movie night.
Yeah.
I love that completely.
What's
for
your
me?
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna probably give around the same things as you are.
Okay.
I know for sure. Like, I have these events where after we get done doing band practice, me and a few of the members of the band will stay behind to watch a good movie, a movie that has, like, a lot of, like, critical praise and people like it. And then we watch a bad movie.
Oh, that's perfect.
So we kind of do the disposition. I think for this movie, I would definitely show this movie to friends of mine. So for like a good kind of party night, I would give it about like a 4.5.
Okay, cool.
But to casual viewers of movies, I gotta give it a 1, 1.5.
Yeah, this movie is not for everyone. I do know, I would be curious to know what happens if you do show this to your friends, because when I watched it the second time with my husband, I saw things coming, and I would start laughing in advance, and he would just like look at me like, "Okay, what is happening next?" And I wouldn't say anything, but I couldn't stop myself from chuckling, knowing what was coming, and the looks he gave me were just priceless. So,
yeah, compared to the first Showgirls, I mean, I actually really liked the first Showgirls
a lot. Too. Yeah,
so much that I have it on VHS and nice. On Blu-ray. And I went to see it in theaters when it came back to a local theater.
Nice.
And paid money because they were shooting it. They showed it in 35mm print.
Oh.
Of Showgirls, which was really kind of cool to watch that for the first time ever. So yeah, this movie doesn't hold a candle to the first Showgirls movie. But if you're into filmmaking at all, you gotta watch everything.
You do.
And keep in mind that she did, you know, shoot everything on, like, kind of a really low budget and made something out of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is admirable, you know.
Well, we're talking about it, so she did something right.
She did, yeah. I still think that I'm reminded of another filmmaker named Anna Biller who made The Love Witch, and I think Viva, and a bunch of other short films, and her shorts are really just, mwah, like, really
I'm gonna have to check
well
that out.
Done. Oh, gosh, Anna Biller, look up The Love Witch, Viva, I mean, her films are immaculate shot stuff, and that's kind of her first couple features. I'm pretty sure that Rinda Riffle didn't go to any type of film school, she just went to tell a story. Definitely a punk rock filmmaker. A filmmaker that I'm going to be having on our show, Maria Galdino, kind of shoots everything on the fly, does things without any permits.
Yep.
But at least her stories have context with there. There actually is. She actually had a script supervisor there to show how scenes should be played out. Like,
oh, yeah.
Everything is linear. So, yeah, like I said before, I talk about shit about Showgirls 2 all the time, but gotta move on from now. I do want to say thank you very much, Jeanette.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Being on the show, I hope to have you back on to talk about another movie. I might have you come back. Have you seen that John Travolta flick, The Fanatic? Or
no.
Virotica?
What was the second one?
There's two movies I want to talk about with you. Okay. The one is the Fanatic that was directed by Limp Bizkit's frontman.
Yeah, I wanted to watch that, but I haven't seen it yet.
The other one is Virotica, which is directed by Glenn Danzig.
Okay.
And that's supposed to be a horror anthology movie that's supposed to be just really terrible.
All right. Hey, you give me the assignment. I will watch, and we will talk about it. I love that.
But thank you very much for being on the show. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I just want to tell people to just keep creating amazing things, because I've actually only been on Twitter for Even though my profile says I've been on longer, I've actually only been active for the last few months. And I'm just so excited about all the people that I get to talk to all over the world and hear about what they're watching and what they think about films. And I've watched so many cool things recently based on the recommendations that I've heard other people talk about on Twitter, and just learning what people's lives are like. So, and the podcasts that I'm listening to now, and the people that I'm following, I just want to say you guys are all amazing and creative, and my life is richer now being on Twitter and being able to see what people are doing and hear what they all have to say. And I know Twitter can be toxic from what I've been reading occasionally. I read people having a hard time. But I think you guys are all amazing, and I'm having the best time interacting with all of y'all.
Aw, thank you very much, Jeanette. And again, listeners, you can find Jeanette Miller Mickenham on Twitter at AKA Jeanette.
Yeah.
And her website is squeakyspeaksfermind.com.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely check that out. As for Cinema Recall, now I urge listeners to go back and listen to our episode on Showgirls, the original Showgirls from 95, with guests Ryan L. Terry and Ashley Burnell. We get into a good conversation about that movie. Now, I know at the end of that episode, I mentioned that I was going to be talking with the folks over at the Parkway Theater about the movie Howard the Duck. And that happened in January, but then our schedules got to be all messed up with, like, work and whatnot, so we're not able to do that episode. And then we were planning to do an episode for probably, like, later in March, but now with the whole coronavirus, that's going to be pushed back for probably April, late April. So I just wanted to let you know that I did mention the Parkway Theater before, and we're still planning on doing that Howard the Duck episode. It's just, life happens, and things sometimes get changed. So if I do mention about a person being on the show for a week or so, that can possibly change. But we're still pushing on, making new episodes. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all our past guests that have been on the show. You can find us on most of your favorite podcast platforms, such as Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher Radio. I think we're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Follow us on social media if you can. We're on Twitter at @cinema_recall, and then on Facebook and Instagram, just type in Cinema Recall Podcast. Don't forget to email us at cinemarecall@gmail.com. Send us those ad spots so we can use them for upcoming episodes. And I think that's all the little housekeeping tips I have to give right now. Big thank you again to Jeanette for being on the show.
Yay!
And yay, Showgirls! And thank you very much, darling.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll be back again very soon.